Introduce yourself, please.
Chris Kobach, Kansas Secretary of State.
This sounds like a big show, but let's hear the open first.
This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
And joining Chris and me today in the KCUR production studio, Melissa Carlson from Overland Park. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Sam.
And my friend and colleague, Nick Haynes, who hosts Week in Review on KCPT. Nice to have you here.
I'm just thoroughly enjoying the Statehouse Blend coffee.
Before we get too deep, Chris, we start with my two favorite questions. Tell me about your kids and your pets, and what motivated you to get into politics?
Wow. Okay, the kids and pets. I can answer that quickly, although we have five kids. We have five daughters in our household, so I rarely get a word in edgewise.
Well, good for you. You're a better man than I am.
Lily, Reagan, Molly, Charlie, and Josie are our five daughters.
And give me the age range.
11 down to 4 months.
Wow.
So,
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. We are blessed indeed. Four little princesses, a lot of pink and purple in our household. And the only male companionship I get is from one of our dogs. Mm-hmm. And we have two dogs, Ajax and Phoebe. They're both hunting dogs. I like to hunt. That's one of my favorite pastimes, so bird hunter. And yeah, those are the main pets. We sometimes, from time to time, we'll have a hamster or a frog, but you know they don't stay around as long.
Oh man, Brittany Spaniels?
No, German Shorthair and a Vizsla.
Wow, good for you. And then, How did you? You know, what motivated you to become Secretary of State?
Okay, Secretary of State. My first dipping my toe into politics was actually in Overland Park, where I was a city councilman starting in 1999, and that was a lot about local issues. Local governments, I think, is really fun. I mean, there are a lot of things people feel very passionate about, but it's also something where you can solve a problem like within a matter of days. You know, there's a street light out, there's something that needs to happen with a park, and it was very satisfying to just kind of get my hands, roll up my sleeves, get my hands dirty, and do some great work in Overland Park. But Secretary of State, it was different. That was in 2010 when I ran for the office for the first time and got elected. Secretary of State, is the number one administrator of voting laws and elections in the country. The Secretary of State also is the chief official in registering businesses. But what really motivated me was the elections issue. We'd seen a lot of cases in the 2008 presidential election of voter fraud, both alleged and proven around the country. ACORN was an organization many people were familiar with. It was in the news. And it occurred to me that this is an area where, the solutions are not rocket science. If you do a few specific legal changes, you can make voter fraud almost impossible to carry out. And so I thought, I'm going to do that. I'm going to run for the office in Kansas, see if I can solve a problem. And I think we largely have done it.
I want to touch on that, maybe even touch a little bit on immigration and presidential politics.
Sure.
But before I start to talk too much, I want to take my first trip around the table and I want to ask Melissa what's on her mind.
To me, voting is so fundamental to who we are as Americans. And it seems that we go to an awful lot of trouble to keep a very few incidents of voter crimes, which are sometimes just spacey old people double voting or something. Not really. I mean, nobody with real criminal intent is doing it. It seems to always just be sort of a mix-up. We're going to a lot of trouble to stop those people. But in the process, we've made it so difficult for well-meaning citizens. We want people to be more involved, but if you put even just the littlest hurdle in front of some people, they just won't. They won't work to get around it. They won't work to turn those papers in or whatever you're requiring of them.
Well, I guess I disagree a little bit on how difficult it is. I mean, photo ID. If you poll it, Kansans are overwhelmingly in favor of it. I mean, it's one of those issues that's really off the charts. About 84-85% Kansans in favor of it. And I think that's because most people just instinctively feel that, hey, existing in the 21st century, you're going to have a photo ID. Virtually all of the people who vote drive to the polling place, which means they were supposed to have a driver's license with them. Heck, you can't even buy the kind of Sudafed that works anymore without a driver's license. I don't think people see it as a barrier. I don't see it as a barrier. There isn't empirical evidence that it causes people not to vote. In fact, in the 2012 elections, comparing it to if you comparing elections is really tough because you have different candidates on the ballot each cycle, and it's the candidates who drive people out. But anyway, I won't go into the weeds here. But if you compare it to the relevant election preceding it, which was the 2000, the last time we didn't have a senator on it, and it was a presidential cycle, it actually increased turnout slightly. So there's no evidence in Kansas that it decreases turnout. If you look at other states, there's no evidence that it decreases turnout to have photo ID. So I understand the argument. I just don't think the reality of life in the 21st century bears that out. That people do have a photo ID, and you can get a free one.
That's a really great point that we are in the 21st century. And what I'd really like to know is, why don't we have a modern system? It seems with all the data technology that's out there, it'd be easy to register people, to automatically register everyone, let some people opt out if they don't want to vote, and then your record goes with you wherever you move. I hate that some people might live in an apartment, be registered, move, to the next voting location, polling place, district, and they aren't registered anymore, or they have to go and change their address on their registration. That's cumbersome. And with our technology today, you know those people. You know where they are, where they're going, and where they're moving to. And as long as they're within the state of Kansas, there should be no reason for them to have to go register.
Well, actually, I'm happy to say that in Kansas, you can register and you can update your registration online. So you can both register online and you can update your registration online. So I think that is adequate in meeting the needs. But I don't believe we should go so far as what you were suggesting. And there's actually a bill in Congress to force the states to do this. I don't think it'll pass, but it's called automatic registration. What automatic registration is that if you're on any government list, if you're on a driver's license list, if you're on a public assistance list, if you've got a Social Security number, any government list, you automatically get registered to vote. And the reason, and you might think, well, yeah, superficially, that sounds pretty good. But the reason it's not is government lists, every single one of them, are full of slop. And what I mean by slop is they're full of errors and they're full of duplicates and they're full of people who don't exist in that place anymore. They've moved to a different place or they may have died. And so what you end up doing is you have all kinds of bad names and bad information on the list. To give you an example, what happens when you combine something like that with and then put it on the voter rolls and you make the voter rolls based on this list is that you have all kinds of inaccuracies. And then whenever you have an all-male election, which all-male balloting election, not an all-male MAL. That would be pre-19th Amendment. No, when you have an all-male ballot election by postal system, you see how sloppy the list is. So Colorado recently moved to all-male balloting. And I was talking to the Secretary of State there a little while ago, and he said that they found out, it was amazing how they found out how bad their voter rolls were. One legislator got two ballots in the mail, one from her maiden under her maiden name, one under her married name. There would be other duplicates. Someone might be on the voter rolls as Bill, some as William. And there were all these people getting multiple ballots and people that no longer lived in the state. And so that's why I'm against this so-called automatic registration systems. You'd think if we had perfect government lists, that might be something that would be feasible to talk about. But we just don't have it. Even in Kansas, where I think nobody's going to doubt if I say we try to maintain clean lists, even our list has lots of names of people who've left the state. In fact, I can tell you there are 125,000 Kansans on our voter rolls who are also registered in another state. That's a lot. We're trying to clean that up. But that's why you can't assume that government lists are always accurate.
I want to come back to these lists, but I want to get to Nick.
Yeah, you bemoan, a lot of people bemoan the fact that there is low voter turnout in this country and, nobody's going to the polls. But as a matter of principle, though, Chris Kobach, you don't think that's a problem? That we should be actually increasing the number of people going to the polls?
I think it is a problem, the low voter turnout in America.
Do you have a role to play then in trying to increase voter turnout?
Absolutely. And the Secretary of State's office should be, my motto as I approach the office is we need to make it easy to vote but hard to cheat. And so, for example, in the presidential election, we had approximately 67% turnout in the state of Kansas in 2012. That's actually good by national standards. A lot of states are much lower than that. But the point is, so what can we do to make
it? What have you done, though? I mean, you've been there now over one term, now into second term.
We've done a bunch of things. We have done, first of all, one thing that we're trying to get low. If you look at the population categories, one of the categories that doesn't vote very regularly, yeah, much. Let's go with much.
Very much, yeah.
It would be the youngest category of voters. So we released an app before this last election, which was a Vote Kansas app, and you can. It's pretty cool. You can get on this app, and it'll show you where your polling place is. It'll give you a sample ballot. It'll confirm whether you're registered. It'll do all kinds of stuff like that on your phone, and you know, because younger voters would like that. And so we did that to encourage younger voters to get out and vote. We've done civics education. We launched a cyber civics webpage, hoping people will get involved in Kansas history and government and find that interesting. And if nothing else, it's helped homeschoolers and it's helped public schools, private schools, anyone who wants to get that information. We're trying to think of ways to get people civically engaged. But I have to say, government doesn't always have the solution for every problem. And I don't think there's any, I think all across the globe, there are governments that want to get people voting in greater numbers. And they've tried all kinds of things. I mean, Australia, for example, makes, they penalize you if you don't vote. Right. But even there, people don't vote and they get angry about being fined for not voting. So I think at some level, we have to do everything we can, but we have to recognize that we just can't, you know, we can't force people to vote. And we can't assume that something we're going to do is going to get us up to 99% participation. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, Chris, I want to go back to something you said before about no evidence that the policies in Kansas are preventing people from voting. Federal government did a study, and I know that you've disagreed with the methodology,
yes.
But in fact, it's out there. The Kansas Committee of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission is going to be holding hearings in mm-hmm. January. You've been invited
yes.
to testify. Are you going to testify,
yes,
by the way?
Good.
Outstanding. So there are people out there, and not just the folks who live in Overland Park, who think that there are some issues with barriers to voting in Kansas. So you can't really say that there's no evidence.
Well, no, but let me tell you the evidence. I mean, it's the GAO study. The
government General Accounting Office. Right?
Yeah,
General Accounting Office.
That's what it used to be called. Now it's the Government Accountability Office. They've got to rename their acronyms while keeping them the same in Washington. Go figure. But anyway, that office had a study, and they looked at, I believe it was either four or six states, and they looked at Kansas as
Tennessee as
two example states that have photo ID. And then they tried to determine, well, did photo ID cause a turnout effect when they compared it against other states? But the problem is you're trying to compare Kansas to other states. So what they ended up doing was like comparing Kansas to Maine. Well, Maine is a state that has a ballot issues, a statewide like Missouri does. Kansas does not. So they had a controversial ballot issue on there. They also had a U.S. Senate race on there. And so they said, well, if you look at the jump in turnout or the change in turnout from 2008 to 2012 in Maine versus 2008 to 2012 in Kansas. We think Kansas turnout should have been a little bit higher. And we're talking about just one or two percentage points. It should have been more like Maine. Well, that's totally comparing apples to oranges. And so that's why we said the statistically appropriate way would be to compare Kansas to Kansas in equivalent election years. And we just disagree with the methodology. And I just think the GAO study is interesting. But if you look at states where they compare within their own state relevant elections to other relevant elections, Georgia has done this extensively, there's no negative effect on turnout. And indeed, there's a slight positive effect on turnout from photo ID.
I want to come back to this, but I saw Melissa lean forward. So there's something. And while she's asking your question, I think we both need a little bit more coffee. Could you pour me some, Chris?
Hey, absolutely.
Right there. I appreciate that. All right. Sorry, Melissa, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Kobach brought up young people.
You can call, by the
affected.
Way, call him, you know, on Statehouse Blend, we use first names.
Yeah.
So you can call him Chris.
Okay, Chris.
Can I still be Mr. Haynes, though?
Yes.
Would that be okay? All right. It's a British thing.
That's what a British accent gets you.
Or governor. You can call him
governor.
Melissa, go ahead.
All right. You did bring up young people being, like, discouraged or not involved. You were saying
they don't vote much.
Yeah. There's people who don't vote much often, yeah, regularly. Things are online today for those people, and I think we ought to be able to vote online. And you can certainly secure an online election. This is something out of...
And there certainly are jurisdictions around America that do that.
And you think about
actually
rural...
no state has online elections. So a couple of states have had some trials in, you know, sort of mock elections. I don't think anyone's actually done an official November election online yet. This is another one where at this point I'm not ready to agree with that. This is an area where low tech is actually better. And the idea is this: all of our polling places in Kansas are independent in the sense that there is no internet connection between them. So when you go to your Overland Park polling place, that machine has a card that records all of the votes cast at that polling place, and that card is physically carried to the Johnson County Election Office. And there's no sort of internet connection where the Johnson County Election Office just knows instantly what votes took place. And the Secretary of State's office doesn't yet know what happened at that polling place or in that county or the other polling places in the other counties. And the reason I'm okay with that not happening in an internet-connected way is then there's no way to hack the system. No one can say that someone was able to influence the entire election by hacking the software. And I'm okay with it being a little bit low-tech in that respect, because as long as we don't – and if you go to an internet system, that's the opposite. Then you do have an immensely hackable system. And I think people – are okay with the way elections are run now, and it's okay if it takes a few hours. I mean, if you had an internet election, sure, you could get the results instantaneously.
It makes it easier to vote. I mean, the fact is that, the fact that we vote on a Tuesday is an outlier in the rest of the world. So there is a barrier in that. If we take that away and we let that happen on the internet, clearly it would increase participation. Right.
But of course, with an internet, you also couldn't have photo ID. You wouldn't be able to do all the security measures we have through internet voting. So I think the exposure of the election to hacking and to fraud, it mitigates any advantage you could gain by saying, well, I got to vote on my computer while sitting on the couch at home.
But and by Chris, the way, we don't vote on Tuesdays.
People
are suspicious of the machines.
Let
me just make one more point. Before we had voting in advance for 20 days, I would have said I agree. We shouldn't just vote on Tuesday. But as a practical matter, we really don't just have 2 days Tuesday voting. We have the election on that Tuesday, but then we have 20 days of advance voting where you can go to the Johnson County Election Office, or you can vote by mail during those days too. So go ahead, sir.
Well, I was going to say I'm not as concerned about online voting being hacked as these machines.
Well, the machines themselves, again, because they're not connected by an internet, I fully recognize that machines can malfunction. And that's one of the reasons when I became Secretary of State, I pushed for what I think is a really important reform. And that is all of our machines now, we're moving toward a paper trail system so that every county in Kansas will eventually have a paper ballot trail. So it'll either be paper ballots that are scanned by machine, or you will have machines, and Johnson County will be moving to this in the very near future, machines that have what's called a voter-verified paper audit trail. A little piece of paper like a grocery store receipt will slide up in front of you under glass. You'll look at the names that are listed that you just pressed in as, yes, I voted for these people, and then you'll say, yes, cast my ballot. So there will be a paper record. So machines can malfunction, but if the machines have a paper trail, then at least we can make sure that the machine-counted vote total matches the paper total. And I think that's absolutely important. We've got to do that.
I'm going to move on to a different but similar topic. I read that you're getting ready to announce prosecutions next month. We're in the middle of August here, so another 2 or 3 weeks for voter fraud that your office has uncovered. You still on track for those September indictments?
Yes. Kansas became, we think, the first state in the country to have prosecutorial authority at the Secretary of State's office. We also added it to the Attorney General's office. Other states have had that. The reason the authority was needed is photo ID and proof of citizenship, they stop some forms of voter fraud, voter impersonation. They stop creating a fictitious identity like Kit Bond famously did in Missouri a few years back. He registered his dog to make a point and stop people from voting those identities. They stop people who are not yet citizens from voting. They stop a wide variety of fraud, but there's still some kinds of fraud you can perpetrate. One of the easiest is voting in two different states. It is almost impossible to stop that. And as I mentioned earlier, 125,000 Kansans are registered in another state, or they were Kansans and are now living in the other state.
How do you know that?
Because we have an interstate cross-check program. Kansas is the state that hosts this program, which compares the voter registration lists of about 30 states. And so we get to see every year how many people are registered in more than one state.
Well, wouldn't it be easier to, in some administrative way, purge those names as opposed to criminally prosecute them?
I won't use the word purge, but we are administratively trying to clean up the voter rolls. So what we do is, if a person's registered in both states, the person will be sent a postcard by one of the states saying, hey, it looks like you've moved away. Could you please confirm that you're no longer living here? If the postcard comes back and they said, yes, that's the case, then they take the person's name off the relevant state's rolls. If the postcard comes back undeliverable, no one living at that by that name living at that address, then the state has to put them on an inactive list. And if two federal election cycles go by, then the state can take them off the rolls. So there is a way already, an administrative way of slowly cleaning up our voter rolls, although you never completely catch up because we're such a mobile society. People are constantly moving. But you also have to, I believe, deter people from doing it in the first place, because like I say, it's very easy. People will move from Kansas to Missouri, and they'll realize that they're still registered in Kansas. They might even, get something from the election office, although it shouldn't be forwarded to them. And then they'll vote in both states. And so we can't stop you beforehand, but we can catch you after the fact. And that's why I think a few prosecutions where, the person's not going to spend time behind bars, but if they, they're fined $1,000 or $2,000 for voting twice, word will get out. Hey, they can actually catch you when you do this, and I don't want to pay a fine, so it will deter the crime, and I think that's positive.
Does the Kansas law, and I'm going to bring Melissa and Nick into this in just a second, but does the Kansas law provide for possible jail time?
Yeah, in theory. I mean, you have, if you look at Kansas crimes.
So what are the penalties under the statute?
I did not bring the statute, but it depends. You have to have this table. We have these non-person misdemeanors and non-person felonies. Yes, in theory, a person could do, I'm forgetting the exact number of days.
But time could, in the county jail, for example.
Could do some time for double voting. I think it's unlikely that it's ultimately up to a judge to sentence someone. These are presumptive probation crimes, by the way. So the presumption that a judge is supposed to address the crime with his probation, we would be asking the judge to do something other than that and give a fine. It's unlikely, but it is possible.
Right. Well, what I'm hearing, I mean, there's a lot of latitude with a prosecutor.
Sure.
What I'm hearing you say is that cases prosecuted out of your office, you will not be asking for jail time.
I don't anticipate it. Unless we had, it's possible. I don't want to say never. I mean, there are a couple of cases we're looking at where you have serial double voters. They've been doing it for years, election after election after election. So, in most cases, no, we would not ask for jail time.
All right. Melissa, you had some thoughts on this, I think.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the people on the suspense list. When they go to vote because they believe they are registered to vote, will they be arrested or fined?
Oh, no,
or
no.
What happens
Absolutely
to those
not.
People? How do they prove that they thought they were registered?
It's not a crime to go and attempt to vote thinking that you had already registered, even if you didn't even do anything to register. You just walked
up and
said.
I'm talking about the people on the suspense
list. No.
And how many
Kansas,
are there
The
now?
Kansas law.
20 to 30,000?
It's actually over 30,000. The suspense list is a list of people who have registered after our proof of citizenship law went into effect on January 1st, 2013, but have not yet provided proof of citizenship yet. And they can do that from their home. You can email it into your county election office. So it's very easy to comply with, but a lot of people haven't done it. We've also found that that list now includes a lot of people who've moved away. Again, getting back to how mobile our society is, it's not at all unusual for someone to, start the registration process because they got a voter registration drive card in January of 2013, and by 2015, they're already living in another state. So,
well, that's the portability portion of online voting or automatic registration is when you move, you are identified as working or living in a new place.
But again, there's no master government list that automatically knows where you are living. You're on multiple lists in multiple states, and you may be on multiple times in a single state. So we don't have this technological silver bullet where you can just instantly know where the person lives and he's automatically removed from all the other states where he's lived in the past.
Nick?
You never see, and you've talked about the huge success you've had in politics, and you've been elected now twice to a statewide office, but you never see a letter in the Kansas City Star or the Lawrence Journal World saying, kudos to Kris Kobach, do you? And you've become the sort of most villainized politician in our region.
I will say that people have written those letters. They don't get published in the Kansas City Red Star.
So,
did I say that?
So to talk to me about that. So, I mean, has that become a big irritant for you?
No, not at all. I mean, I just recognize that the print media is what it is. I think, KCUR, radio and television media is much more balanced. But no, I don't expect to be treated even-handedly in the newspaper.
Well, but there are newspapers across Kansas who have taken you to task, Garden City, in Russell, in Wichita, well, let's forget Wichita for a second. But a lot of small Kansas towns have taken you to task for your policies in and around voting.
Let's be accurate. A lot of editorial page editors in small town newspapers.
Well, you don't think they represent some of the people in those towns?
I visit those towns all the time, and they will tell me, hey, don't pay any attention to what Jason Probst writes in the Hutchinson News. Don't pay any attention to what Rhonda Holman writes in the Wichita Eagle. Don't pay any attention. I can go down the list, and those editors who control the editorial page are very different from the reporters. They're very different from the radio people in those towns, and they're very different from the citizens of those towns in their political viewpoint. So, no, I don't get bothered by that at all.
I just want to wrap. So who is running these criminal prosecutions out of your office?
We have a staff of three attorneys plus myself who are doing it, and they are going through the cases and collecting evidence. Usually, for example, in a case of a double voting instance, you've got to get evidence from another state. So, yeah, they're in the process of collecting evidence right now.
These are people who have prosecutorial backgrounds. You're a very learned man, but you do not have a prosecutor's background.
There are two attorneys, one who is a Jefferson County prosecutor and another who used to work for the Kansas Attorney General. Indeed, the Jefferson County prosecutor also used to work for the Kansas Attorney General. Yes, we have two people with a very long prosecutorial background who are kind of heading the effort.
All right, we're going to take one more trip around the table before we wrap it up. Nick Haines, your final question.
Well, yeah, Sam just mentioned, the editorials, and he's really, talking about, they are upset about your position on voting, but really it's about immigration. Yet we have Donald Trump, who's doing exceptionally well in the polls at the presidential level because of the immigration question. And whatever he has said, it has only elevated his chance.
An illegal immigration question, with appropriate kudos to our legal immigrants to the United States.
Yeah. So I'm just curious about, you're feeling less marginalized you've got somebody now who is at a bigger level now talking about the immigration question.
Well, I've never felt marginalized by it. I believe that the American people agree with me that we have a system of legal immigration. There's nothing wrong with asking people to come here legally and denying benefits and encouraging people who come here illegally to not stay and to return to their homes and do it the right way. Donald Trump has got a very big megaphone. He has elevated the issue, but he's certainly not the only one. Ted Cruz in the presidential field on the Republican side has been talking about illegal immigration, and others have as well. So, this is an issue that I think if you poll it, lots of Democrats agree completely that we have got to do something to restore the rule of law to the way our immigration system works. And we've also got to protect the wages of Americans. And the number one factor that has depressed wages in the United States in the last 20 years is illegal immigration.
Wait a minute. Who says that?
You can check with all kinds of George Borjas, Harvard economist. And it's really not rocket science. You think about it. If people come in and they're willing to accept a much lower wage, look at meatpacking. Meatpacking has seen actual decreases, not just adjusted for inflation, but in actual dollars. Look at wages in hotel room cleaning. Same thing. All of these industries where you see illegal labor come in, the wages drop down, and Americans, hardworking Americans, aren't able to make a living on those wages. So, I'm with the working man and woman who's saying, what's happening to our wages? Well, one of the causes is illegal immigration.
Well, don't you think one of the causes is over the last 30 or 40 years that fewer Americans in those jobs are unionized?
That may be a factor in some industries. I think that's certainly a legitimate argument, yeah. But I think there are multiple causes. But if you look at the one that's driving wages down, it's the glut of illegal alien workers who will accept a wage half of what the American worker will accept. That the market forces then naturally push the wages down in those industries. And I don't see how you can argue with that unless you want to deny all the laws of economics.
Well, I think there are people who would – I think there's probably plenty of economists
argument. Give me their names. Tell me. Seriously, I don't think anyone can argue that if you have a massive influx of immigrant labor, and in this case mostly illegal immigrant labor, it will drive down the wages in that industry. I mean, that's fundamental.
By the way, just want to – so since you brought up the presidential election, are you ready to endorse today?
No, not ready to endorse today.
Okay. Final thought or question?
Thanks.
Melissa.
My final thought is about the committee that discussed in-state tuition for children of undocumented workers, undocumented aliens. Maybe they're not working. But what made me think of that was – when that was in the committee, Ed Trimmer brought up E-Verify. If you E-Verify, then there won't be, the people who shouldn't be here will leave because there are no jobs. But then it got tabled. Because I think people want to blink at E-Verify. They want those workers who will work for very cheap wages that no American would work for. And so they're here. I mean, they are here. They're working. They're working for low wages. And their children are here. And I believe we should educate them. Because when you educate children, then they go on to product. They have the potential to go on to productive lives. If we just say, no, college is unaffordable, you don't deserve to go to our schools, our colleges, then nobody gets ahead.
I think it is outrageous to give in-state tuition subsidies to people who are illegally in the country. Look, I'm looking at, down the road at paying college tuition for 5 daughters. And I think a lot of listeners are paying college tuition right now for their kids, or they may be in college and accruing student debt. The idea that the people of Kansas should use their taxpayer dollars to, instead of reducing tuition, they're going to give a tuition gift, and it's now over $20 million a year, to illegal aliens in the state. That's outrageous. A state should look after its own citizens and residents first before it even thinks of giving away a huge subsidy to those who are not here legally. And think of it from a fairness point of view. Someone who grows up on the Missouri side of the state line and decides he or she wants to go to KU is going to pay 3 times as much in tuition as someone whose presence in Kansas is illegal under federal law. And so I think as a fundamental matter of fairness and as a matter of we don't have enough resources in higher education from the individual family's perspective, why would you not give that money to Kansas, that subsidy to Kansas families, and you know, then think about maybe people from Missouri coming in who are here as U.S. citizens before you give it away to illegal aliens?
But the parents who broke the law, what do you think should happen then to those children? Should they be locked into a cycle of poverty or low-wage jobs where they can never work
At this point, they're not children. So you're talking about people who are brought in before the age of 18. They have now become adults. As adults, should they be given a gift by the taxpayers of Kansas? No. The taxpayers of Kansas are already having a hard time getting their own children through college. We should not be asked to provide a subsidy to people who are here illegally. Now, those individuals who are brought in before the age of 18, now they've turned 18, now they take on the responsibility of their illegal presence under federal law. I believe they should follow federal law. Return to the home country, get in line, come in legally. It will take a long time. It will involve paying some fees. But you know what? There are millions of Americans who are now Americans, and millions of people who want to become Americans who are doing it the legal way. And I think it's a slap in the face to legal immigrants every time we give a benefit to somebody who is here breaking the law.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Melissa Carlson, thank you from Overland Park. Thanks for being
for
in
having
here.
Me.
My colleague and friend Nick Haynes, a thrill to have you here on State House Blend.
Happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Chris Kobach, to get to know you just a little bit better, we end the program with your favorite song. What is it?
Wow, my favorite song.
It's that British group, you know, Chris.
I have so many favorites. Favorite song. You should have told me beforehand what to think about
it. It's not as fun.
It's okay. Well, I like a lot of U2 songs. I could come up with one favorite. My kids are singing Now I'm a Believer all the time. I think they were watching Shrek, and so I've got that in my head. I've got the yes. Now I'm a Believer. So that would be the Monkees, I think, circa 1967 or something. I just can't get that out of my head right now, but that's not my favorite.
But I have to say, first Matt Hodapp, first Monkees reference here. Absolutely. So that's what we're going to go with. State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on iTunes or KCUR.org/StateHouseBlend. Our buddy Steve Kraske over there on Up to Date, he clears a little room for us every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. You guys on the Twitter? You on the Twitter there, State House Secretary of State on the Twitter?
I do have a Twitter handle? But I don't do the tweets. So I think it's probably Chris Kobach, at Chris Kobach, I'm pretty sure.
All right. If you're a fan of the Twitter, I'm at Sam Zeff. You can follow my co-host, Brian Ellison. He's at PTS. Brian. That's State House Blend. See you next time.
I thought love was only true in fairy tales and for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed.